7:30 on This West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. An Israeli consulate general is on a trade mission to West Virginia.
This is the first of, I have a feeling, many such visits to West Virginia. There are many economic opportunities that I would like to explore between Israel and West Virginia.
The story coming up on This West Virginia Morning. A representative of Governor Tomlin told legislators yesterday no programs had to be cut and no employees had to be laid off as a result of the federal government shutdown. But with an agreement from Congress that only funds the government through the first of the year, the administration is still worried the state could run into the same issues again. As Ashton Maurer reports, the Tomlin administration will ask state lawmakers to consider taking legislative action to prevent future problems when there's a lack of federal funding.
I think it's safe to say that we are relying on an unreliable partner.
Governor Tomlin's Deputy Chief of Staff, Jason Pizzutella, stood before a Joint Finance Committee meeting in the House chamber to describe the impact the federal shutdown had on the state. While Pizzutella says West Virginians who rely on federal and state-funded services saw almost no changes in their benefits, if the shutdown had continued through the end of the month, it would have been a different story.
What we've tried to do in the governor's office is try to figure out exactly how state government can insulate itself from the instability that is currently present in Congress and throughout the federal government.
As the governor and his staff prepared for the shutdown, two issues arose: continuing to fund federal services and paying employees whose salaries are reimbursed by the federal government. As far as programs and services go, legislators were told the departments of Health and Human Resources and Education would have been most affected because they rely so heavily on federal aid. In fact, that federal aid is larger than the state's annual budget at about $4.8 billion. Director of the State Budget Office Mike McCown says Medicaid is one of those programs, and in order for it to continue in a long-term shutdown, the state would have to cover the federal portion.
Medicaid alone would take almost $200 million a month. Today we had $50 million cash. I mean, it would last 1 week.
McCown says Medicaid is just one of hundreds of state programs paid for in some part by the federal government. He says there's no way the state could keep up with the payments, and there's no guarantee we would be repaid for the money spent. Secretary of Revenue Bob Kiss says the governor asked agencies to begin prioritizing federally funded programs in case that money would run out. But that money not only pays for the programs, it also pays for employees who operate them, either by reimbursing the state for all or part of their salaries.
Because if we've got to all of a sudden be faced with a situation where we simply don't have the resources to fund positions that are in part or entirely funded with federal dollars, there's going to be some serious ramifications, and somebody's going to have to start making some decisions. And you can make the argument right now that without statutory authority, it's unclear who or if anyone has the authority to make those decisions.
Kiss says that's where state lawmakers come into play. West Virginia has no statute, nothing in code, to furlough workers paid with federal dollars when that money runs out.
We don't have a furlough statute. Okay. You can lay them off, so to speak. That authority is there. But furlough them with the concept that they're being let go without pay, but they're basically retaining their status as an employee, and then you just bring them back when you've got the cash available to pay them, as opposed to terminating their employment.
Kiss says just to lay off workers would create issues with vacation time, sick leave, and even retirement benefits when they're brought back to work. So the governor is asking lawmakers to consider enacting furlough legislation to avoid those problems in the future.
I think having gone through this exercise hopefully will be beneficial, and I think the legislature's taking the time to deliberatively think about these issues. I don't think it'd be that complicated to come up with a statute. The federal government has a furlough statute, and it wouldn't be that complicated for us to come up with one similarly.
Kiss adds, however, the state will hopefully be able to avoid any major issues should a federal shutdown occur in January, because the legislature will be in session and available to take necessary actions. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
An Israeli general consul is in West Virginia this week, visiting lawmakers as well as both Jewish and Christian groups. As Glennis Board reports, Yaron Seidman met with members of a Morgantown synagogue yesterday who were not happy with his participation in an event featuring a prominent evangelical Christian politician.
Yaron Seidman is the consul general of Israel to the Mid-Atlantic region of the U.S. He's one of nine Israeli consuls. Among stops in Morgantown was the Tree of Life, the Jewish synagogue.
A consulate does not shy away from the geopolitical, if you will, reality in the Middle East and the challenges and opportunities that it presents to Israel. But if I had to sum up what a consulate does in two words, it's relationship building.
Seidman explained that part of his job is to expand cultural ties between Israel and the U.S. by meeting with community members and encouraging events that promote Israel. To that end, he also participated in an event hosted by Christians United for Israel. The keynote speaker at the event was Gary Bauer, one-time presidential candidate and the head of the nonprofit organization American Values. Many members of the Jewish community, however, took issue with the event, telling Seidman the values represented were those of the Christian extreme right.
Aligning yourself with people like this is the best way to lose the American middle. And I hope when you go back to conference room settings with your fellow diplomats who consider these kinds of alliances, you make that point.
Seidman reiterated that the event's purpose was solely to support the state of Israel.
If it's anything different than support of Israel, I'll be the first to make public note of that.
Seidman says his remarks at the Christian event were largely to celebrate the securing of a Jewish homeland.
I'll be talking about the state of Israel, about the significance of Israel's existence, about its achievements, about some of its challenges, about the historical moment in time that we are at, that 65 years ago we have reestablished our sovereignty or reinstated our sovereignty over our ancestral homeland where we were born as a people 4,000 years ago. And we established ourselves or reestablished ourselves 65 years ago in the land that we have been dreaming to return to for 2,000 years. So it's a historical, unique moment in time that we should all relish and do everything that we can in order to sustain it for at least 2,000 years more.
Seidman says perhaps even more than promoting cultural ties in West Virginia, his goal is to expand economic ties.
This is the first of... I have a feeling many such visits to West Virginia. There are many economic opportunities that I would like to explore between Israel and West Virginia in areas such as energy, biotechnology, chemicals, the chemical industry that are very strong in Israel and in West Virginia. And I think there are many opportunities there. I would like to see if I can... promote mutual business between Israel and West Virginia, more so than there is today.
Seidman's West Virginia visit continues today in Charleston, where he'll be meeting with members of the Jewish community, as well as legislative leaders in both the House and the Senate. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glennis Board in Morgantown.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:38. Cloudy skies with showers likely this morning, becoming partly sunny this afternoon, but still there's a chance of rain. Cool today, with temperatures in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Mostly cloudy with a chance of rain after midnight tonight, overnight lows in the 30s and 40s. Rain likely Wednesday. Morning snow showers are possible in the northern panhandle. Little or no snow accumulation is expected. Temperatures tomorrow in the 40s and 50s.
Support provided by the West Virginia Hospital Association. The new health insurance marketplace provides a variety of choices. Coverage options and enrollment information are available at healthcare.gov or 1-800-381-2596. Support is also provided by State Electric Supply Company, your full-line electrical supply distributor, online at stateelectric.com.
High school students across the state are getting help applying for college thanks to a state initiative. The statewide College Application and Exploration Week was last week at schools across West Virginia and at Concord University. Student Chad Brown has more from the College Prep Rally.
The event featured four speakers who each gave advice about the steps in the college application process, ranging from how to select a college suited to a student's needs to important financial advice. Melissa Catuso helped coordinate the prep rally. She is a representative of GEAR UP, which stands for Gaining Early Awareness and Readiness for Undergraduate Programs. She says this was not just for giving hints and pointers for prospective college students. It's much more than that. The students, each equipped with a provided laptop, had their chance to apply to a college of their choice via a website for the College Foundation of West Virginia. Application fees and essays are not the only challenges that West Virginia high schoolers face. The financial conditions of the state stack the odds against them as well. West Virginia has been ranked as the second poorest state in the union from sources such as the Wall Street Journal. Also, according to AECF.org, which stands for the Annie E. Casey Foundation, 22% of the population in West Virginia from ages 18 to 24 do not have a job or an education past high school. This is why the West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission and GEAR UP wanted to hold the College Application and Exploration Week. Adam Green, Senior Director of the Division of Student Success at the West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, is confident that programs like this can improve the state's college attendance rates. GEAR UP empowers high school students to help their peers as well. These students are called Higher Education Readiness Officers, or HEROs. Three of them at Tuesday's prep rally seem to take the responsibilities as heroes seriously. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Chad Brown, Athens.
Stories and photographs from the Lost and Kakapin River Valley are featured in a book just released by the West Virginia University Press. As Cecilia Mason reports, the book features the stories of people who love the land they own in the valley.
Listening to the Land features the stories of several owners throughout the watershed who have chosen to preserve their land through the Kakapin and Lost River Land Trust. The Trust Executive Director, Nancy Ailes, says the idea for the book came from these landowners.
When we signed some of the first easements that the Land Trust did, people started sobbing, literally, in the easement signing in the attorney's office. And I started realizing that there are these great stories behind those tears, and so I started asking people about that. And so I thought, gosh, we could hire somebody to capture these feelings and hire a photographer to do the same thing.
So the Land Trust wrote a grant proposal and received $50,000 from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation to hire documentary writer Jamie Ross and photographer Tom Cogill to traverse the valley, documenting the people, their land, and their stories.
The land is beautiful. I think this valley could be a national park.
A lot of your pictures are very close up, though. You got right in there, didn't you?
Oh, yes, yeah. So most of what I've done in the past is photograph people. So I approach photography as sort of a portrait-driven experience. It was sort of like doing portraits of the land.
Now, the book's sitting here. Can you open it and show me something that you took that you're particularly proud of or like a lot or reflects what you saw when you came up through the area?
I like this one quite a bit. It's the two-page spread for the section called The Pull of Home. And it's a double truck picture, a two-page picture of an interior wall of an old abandoned house, I think it is, whitewashed walls, and probably 100 people have written their name and the date, just kind of scratched it on the walls. Some of them have extended stories. Others, it's just initials and dates, but it goes back a long way.
So why were you attracted to taking that picture? Was it the stories? Was it?
It's a portrait. It's a short story. It talks about the people who live here without showing any of them.
While Cogill shot photos, Ross interviewed people. The Land Trust chose about 30 families whose stories might be interesting to hear, including those who still live there, as well as some who grew up in the valley and moved away. The 150-page book documents through stories and photos families like the Hans, Mongold, Slonikers, and Mills as they participate in activities like hunting, farming, enjoying meals, and gathering mushrooms.
Do you have a favorite story in there?
I think one of my favorite stories is Josh Fry's, just that whole family story.
The book says Josh comes from a long line of Fry's who have worked on the family's farm near Wardensville, where Fry's father and two of his brothers died in accidents.
His mother lost one son and then almost lost another, and still they could not bring themselves to sell the property even though they moved off. And part of that, too, goes with all the funny stories that go along. You know, his father driving the hearse down in the valley to sleep in it to scare, when they were growing turkeys, to scare off the owls, I think, that were marauding and his mother just dying of embarrassment that her husband was sleeping in a hearse out in the middle of a pasture, and just all of that, you know. And Josh speaks so warmly about farming. When people used to move from farm to farm to accomplish the tasks, you know, they would do haying as a group and move from one place to the next.
Another profile features Bobby Ludwig from Baker, who the book says went off to college in New England and built a lucrative career on Wall Street. Ludwig no longer lives full-time in Hardy County, but he's bought and preserved thousands of acres of farmland to prevent developers from building houses on it. Ross says Ludwig had a good comeback when officials wanting to widen the state highway near his farm suggested he could just go buy another piece of property in exchange for the one they'd take.
And he says, well, how about I take your girlfriend, spend the night with her, and you just go get another one? It's not just the attachment, it's the wit and wisdom and everything they bring to it.
Ross says there were two thoughts she heard over and over again as she interviewed people. It's important to leave the land better than you found it, and your word is your bond. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Cecilia Mason in Wardensville.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Find great stories, photos, and videos, and you can subscribe to our West Virginia Morning podcast. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Beth Voorhees.